Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome back. It's good to see everyone. We have, I think, another month or so. So with the Siyata Dishmaya, we have a chance to continue learning Machshava this month. I thought that for today, we would talk about a very difficult issue, and that is the problem of evil or understanding suffering. Why this topic? One reason relates to Yom HaShoah, which was yesterday. Another is I'd like to talk about this week's Parsha, Vayidom Aaron, the death of the sons of Aaron. Today we're going to focus on the approach of the Ramban to the question. Obviously, we're not going to even complete Ramban's Mahalach, and certainly we're not going to see everything on the topic, so it will be incomplete. But I think that a lot of very important yisodos come out from this Ramban, and I hope to, towards the end of this year, to talk about the Ramban on this week's Parsha on Vayidom Aaron. In your, you have Makoros on the canvas, if you'd like to download them. Most of what we're going to be doing today is from the Ramban's Shar HaGmul. The Shar HaGmul is part of Taras Adam. Taras Adam is the Ramban's halachos on Avelos. And what's interesting is that at the beginning of Taras Adam, we have the a very important Hakdama, which talks about this topic. We're going to get to that at the end of today's year. And then at the end, we have Shar HaGmul. Shar HaGmul is not just about suffering. Shar HaGmul, literally the gate of Gmul, Gmul meaning reward. So he talks about the nature of din, when we're judged, why we're judged, why are there so many judgments? That's what he begins with. Rosh Hashanah, Lachar Misa, before Tchis HaMesim, etc. He talks about the idea of Olam Haba, Gan Eden, Gehenim, what are all these things? But obviously, a big part of it, as we're going to see today, is his discussion on suffering. So that's what we're going to focus on today. Before beginning, it's worth noting that Chazal tell us in Pirkei Avos, Ein biyadeinu lo mishal vas harishayim ve'af lo miyisurei hatzadikim. So this is something that we can't understand, the problem of evil, why the righteous suffer, why the wicked prosper. This is something that we can't answer. We don't understand. What's interesting is you might have thought that since that's the case, why should we even talk about it? Why are we bothering with this sugya? So the Ramban obviously didn't feel this way. The Ramban felt, and we'll see him say this explicitly towards the end of today's shiur, that even though this is something that we can't fully understand, but we have to do our best to try. We have to study the sugya. We have to learn the Makoros. We have to look at Chazal and Psukim and see what they teach us. And even if in the end we might say, well, we don't understand, but nevertheless, we have to do our best to try. And we'll see at the very end of today's shiur, Ramban says that the attitude of Moaseh HaChachma is to say, well, if I can't understand the whole thing, then I'm not even going to try. That is the approach of those who hate wisdom. Those who love wisdom, and that should be our attitude, say, let me try to understand as much as I could possibly understand. So that's what we're going to be doing today. The Ramban begins, as you could see here again, at the very beginning of your Makoro sheet, with a statement in Chazal, the Gemara in Brachos, which tells us how to respond to suffering. So the Gemara tells us, Amru Rabbo Seinu, Imroa Adam Shisurin Ba'in Alav, Yifash Vesh B'maisav, Shinemar Nach Basadir Achenu V'nach Kora. So the first thing that a person must do when they experience suffering is to examine their conduct. And a person should initially assume that their suffering is a result of sin. And the Gemara continues, Pishpesh Vilomatza, Yitla Bevitl Torah. If you can't find any averos that you've done, So you should attribute it to Bittul Torah. So what exactly does that mean? The Ramban here says something very interesting. In a moment, he says that Bittul Torah is lav dafka, Bittul Torah per se, but it means the failure to realize your potential. In other words, if it's not because you've done something wrong, it's because you haven't done enough of what's right. Part of tshuva is not just to consider the averos that you've done, but the lack of mitzvos, and mitzvos in a formal sense, but also in terms of fulfilling your potential. Talmud Torah is the greatest example of that. It's keneged kulam, and it's a constant mitzvah that demands of us that we use all of what we have to serve God. So that's the next thing. It's worthwhile to stress before we see the third part of that Gemara, that this, of course, is the first aspect to dealing with suffering and the problem of evil, certainly on a personal level, which is our response to suffering is practical. It's not philosophical. Rav Soloveitchik, who deals extensively with these issues in, among other places, called Odi Dofeik, emphasizes this point towards the beginning of that essay. He writes that we ask not about the reason for evil and its purpose, but rather about its rectification and uplifting. How should a man react in a time of distress? What should a person do so as not to rot in his affliction? The halachic answer to this very question, to this question, is very simple. Suffering comes to elevate man, to purify his spirit and to sanctify him, to cleanse his mind and purify it from the chaff of superficiality and the dross of crudeness, to sensitize his soul and expand his horizons. In general, the purpose of suffering is to repair the imperfection in man's persona. Now, the truth is that this is going much further than just attributing it to sin. As we'll see shortly, it's allowing a person to realize his potential. So the first step, the first, in a sense, practical aspect of our Avodas Hashem is not to consider the philosophical problem, but to address the issue practically. And the Rav says very powerfully how pitiful is if man's suffering does not bring him to a spiritual crisis and his soul remains frozen and bereft of forgiveness. Meaning to say, if you don't learn, if you go through a difficult experience, individual, community, and you remain the same. So that is something that's truly pitiful. But the Gemara continues, and the Gemara says, well, what about if you can't attribute it to sin? Tala v'lo matza, biyaduas sheyisurin shel ahava hein. So then this is an example of yisurin shel ahava. And the Gemara quotes psukim that refer to this concept of yisurin shel ahava. So says the Ramban, what exactly does this mean? So let's, I'm going to read now. Again, I'm going to be skipping around a little bit. We can't read the whole thing inside. Lamadu mehem zal shisurin b'ayin t'chila al ma'is v'arayim shel adam v'hein al averos shel lo saseh shehadin no sein she'anish aleihem l'fikach shereisurin b'ayin alav roi l'fashish b'ma'isav v'lachzor mehem b'tshuva v'zeo shenemar nach b'sad rechim v'nach korven ha'shuvad Hashem u'pamim shisurin b'ayin al bitul Torah v'chein kiyote b'zeh v'hein bitulei mitzvah saseh, like we said, it's a bitul mitzvah saseh, not just Torah. Fine. So what about the last thing? Somebody who's a tzaddik. And there's nothing to attribute it. There's no averos. There's no bitul mitzvah. Now you could say that this is not really a very practical thing. Who after all, has no averos, who has fully fulfilled his potential. But the concept that there should exist such a thing as Yisurin Shel Ahava is very, very fundamental. And moreover, it's very, very important in relating to the suffering of other people. In other words, the reality is, as the Ramban is going to explain, that we do either experience or certainly witness suffering that we can't attribute to simply either punishment or even inspiration, reaction to sin. And so how do we deal with that? Is there another option? So the Gemara says, yeah, there's a third option, and that's Yisurin Shel Ahava. And what are they? What does Yisurin Shel Ahava mean? So he writes, V'hein kederach ha'yisurin shepirashnu lemala liten loscharo mishalem l'olam haba. These Yisurin allow a person to have their full schar in olam haba. V'lama nikra'u Yisurin Shel Ahava, V'halo Yisurin shepirashnu Yisurin Shel Ahava shenhein, al miyot aveiro sha'asa kigon, shehein bain al shigigas ma'isav al helam davar. So the truth is, we're not starting at the beginning here. He's referring to something that he said before. He says, why are these called Yisurin Shel Ahava? They, after all, come on a person because of perhaps a shogeg. He overlooked something. Ketzad. And he gives an example. Harei she'achol b'shogeg nikra chote. We know that someone who doesn't have a shogeg is called a chote. You bring a karpon chatas, not for an avera done b'mezid, but an avera that's done b'shogeg. So what is the chet? Why do you have to bring a karp on chatas for shogeg? A person should have tremendous zehiros about Isser. They should carefully check again and again. A avera done b'shogeg is, at least typically, a result of lack of care, lack of concern. And that is a chet. It reflects an inappropriate attitude towards mitzvos Hashem. Al derech hazu, hu tam chet hashgaga b'chol haTorah. The ode, and then the answer adds a second thing. Shekol davar aser melachlech es hanefesh umetame osa. Dechsev v'nitmeisem bam. That's actually, I think, from this week's Parsha. So it's connected to our Parsha in another way. This week's Parsha, Parsha Shmini, has, of course, a very big discussion about machalos asuros. And towards the end of the discussion, the pasuk tells us that when it comes to eating these things that the Torah prohibits, if we do so, we become corrupted. It's melachlech es hanefesh. It contaminates us spiritually. And the purpose of korbanos is to address that. And what he's about to say is that the purpose of Yisurin is that, at least in the absence of karbanos, it addresses that. So let's try to elaborate on what he's been saying over here, because there's a number of important yisodos. So let's start from the beginning of Yisurin Shel Ahava. So what do Yisurin Shel Ahava mean? Why would Hashem punish us as an act of love? That's what Yisurin Shel Ahava means. Hashem causes us to have Yisurin out of love. So if we take a look at Rashi and that Gemara that the Ramban here is quoting on Brachos Daf Hey, Rashi writes on Amud Aleph, it means HaKadosh Baruch Hu Miyasher B'olam Hazeh B'lo Shum Avon K'dei Lahar Boschora B'olam Haba Yosef M'K'dei Yisuchu Yosef. By a person is entitled to a certain chelik in Olam Haba based off of his zechuyos. Again, this is a very immature way of thinking about it, but for our purposes, based off of my amount of mitzvot I've done, I'm entitled to a 97 of Olam Haba points. But by experiencing Yisurim, so now I get up to 105. Now the truth is, that's Rashi and Amud Aleph. Rashi and Amud Beis adds an additional dimension. Which implies that it's not just laharbos chuyosav, perhaps something more like Ramban. We'll get back to it in a moment. But that's the pashup shot in Yisurin Shalava. Like Rashi says, this is also the view of the Rambam. I think we mentioned this earlier in the year, that the Rambam says Yisurin Shalava is exactly that. Miyastro b'olam hazeh, b'lo shum avon kedei laharbos tzcharo b'olam haba. Now, the truth is that that's something very hard to understand. The Rambam himself, in the Mor Nevuchim, says that we don't accept the concept of Yisurin Shalava. He acknowledges it's a view in Chazal, but he doesn't think it's the correct view. He quotes many psukim that he sees as against it because he doesn't think that makes sense. How could you have an idea? You know, I punish somebody to give them more reward. What's the logic there? And the Ramban also thinks that this doesn't make sense. The Ramban rejects this understanding of Yisurin Shalava. And that's what we see over here. So he's saying, what does Yisurin Shalava mean then? Yisurin Shalava means that Yisurin that come for a person, upon a person, not because they've done an Avera B'mezid, but rather because they've done an Avera B'shogeg. So looking at the person, this person might not, has you know, he's done a cheshbon and nefesh, no averos los asay. Okay, great. So no mitzvos asay that he hasn't done that he could think of, right? He sat down, he can't come up with anything. So these are Yisurin Shalava. These are averos that he might have done without being aware of them. But if I'm not aware of them, what have I done wrong? So the first thing that we saw the Ramban say, and this is a tremendous musarvart, is that oftentimes they come from negligence. If a person has the right attitude towards Torah mitzvos, so they won't be negligent, right? Imagine a person accidentally eats something non-kosher. So he's not aware of it, right? That's why when he did his cheshbon nefesh, he couldn't come up with it. But it probably happened because he wasn't paying enough attention because he lacked Yir Shamayim. So Yisurin Shalava atone for that sort of misdeed. That's the first thing the Ramban says over here. And then we just saw the Ramban adds an additional point, which is that they cleanse the metaphysical harm that a chait happens, like the Ramban said, that a chait corrupts the nitmei simba. And the Ramban explains that's why we have karbanos for shogeg. Karbanos for shogeg, again, one reason is it's negligence, but the second is that we need to address the harm caused by averos. So let's try to understand this a little better. The Ramban here is saying that the Torah's mitzvos are not just random. When Hashem says, don't eat X, Y, or Z, it's not just to instill obedience, but rather X, Y, and Z must be harmful in some way. They correspond to metaphysical realities. So these foods are destructive. They might be physically destructive, maybe, but probably not. Probably it relates more to their spiritual harm. So if that's true, the Ramban is writing, that even when they're violated unintentionally, they still trigger some type of damage. If a person eats the non-kosher food, then they devastate their soul. Even if there was no negligence. So the difference between the first answer and the second answer, the first answer says that you need to address the negligence. The second answer he's saying indicates that perhaps even if there is no negligence, there's still an issue. Now, it's sort of interesting, and I'm not entirely sure of the answer to this question. Is this relevant for all averos? What do I mean to say? So we know that a carbon chatas is only brought for a lav sheyesh bo kares. In other words, if you eat chelav b'shogeg, you have to bring a carbon chatas. If you eat basar b'chalav or nevela b'shogeg, you don't. So does that imply that it's only averos? Because he's explaining karbanos over here, that only averos sheyeshbo yeshben karis, which are obviously more chamor, need this? Or no, it's just more pressing, and therefore the Torah was mitzvah karbanos. I'm not sure. The other thing that the Ramban implies over here by quoting the pasuk that he does is that perhaps when it comes to karbanos, averos in the realm of machal sasuros, there's particularly a concern of timtum halev. This is an idea that you do find in a number of svarim. The Gemara Shabbos, in a couple of places, I think, implies this. The Mesils Yesharim in Perek Yud Aleph makes this point that when it comes to machal sasuros, there is particular concern. It's interesting. Interesting question to think about is, does a person have to worry about consuming something that isn't kosher, assuming they've properly followed the halachic process? Let me give you an example. I remember a number of years ago, there was a kashrus scandal in Muncie. Certain butcher shops sold non-kosher chickens. And so you had a lot of people who were Erlich HaYidin, who turns out, unbeknownst to them, they consumed non-kosher food. And so there were some halachic issues that had to be dealt with. The people off the kasher, their kalim and the likes, some very interesting halachic shilas that had to be dealt with. But there was also this hashkafic question. Does a person have to do tshuva? Right, assuming that there was no negligence at all, they went to the store. Let's assume it had a good hechsher. Right, they didn't do anything wrong. I don't think anyone would say that there was negligence over here. Do they have to do tshuva? Usually, we think of a tshuva when there is such a thing as negligence. So some argued, there's a Torah journal that's published in Muncie called Or Yisrael, and there were a number of articles back and forth about this question. So I don't remember what they said. I don't know if I read them so carefully, but this Ramban that we're learning over here is a very relevant makor for that, the concept of Timtum Halev. But the truth is that this Ramban might be somewhat ambiguous, because again, I'm not sure that anyone ate chela from that butcher shop. I think it was chickens that were the issue. So the question is, this Ramban is an important makor. On the one hand, the Ramban clearly says that there's a kilkel that results from the consumption of non-kosher food by its very nature. It's a natural consequence. On the other hand, there is no karban being brought for this type of thing. And then the question is, does that imply that there isn't a tikkun that's necessary? So let's read on the Ramban. We'll see what he says about this. So the Ramban continues over here. And the Ramban says that this is the purpose. So let's read on a little bit from where we left off. So again, I'll just read, you see that line in the third paragraph, starting where it's bolded, those four words in bold. So va'od, moreover, shekol davar ha'aser. So again, that lashon of kol davar ha'aser is very broad. It implies that it indicates that perhaps it implies to all averos. Melachlech hanefesh u'metame yosa, d'chsiv v'nitmei simbam. Ulefikach, Nikra Shogeg Hashogeg Chote. So is Gehenim the right place for someone who did an aver b'shogeg? No, that's not the right place because he didn't do it b'mezid. Ela shutzarach miruk may also avon. Nevertheless, he needs some type of miruk. He needs to be cleansed. Uliskadesh ulitar mimenu, and to be purified from it. Kadeshi aroi lamaila hahogenes lamaisav hatovim b'olam haba. So that he's ra'oi for that mila. In other words, based off of this person's avodas Hashem and his mitzvahs, he's ra'oi to a certain madrega in olam haba. But he can't get there because he's been contaminated. Lefikach chas HaKadosh Baruch Hu al amo v'al chasidav. V'nasam lahem ha-korbanos l'skaper bahen hashgagos. So out of compassion and love, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Klal Yisrael korbanos to allow them to be cleansed from those averos that they did b'shogeg. That's why dafka their korbanos b'shogeg. Right, for the most part, there aren't many korbanos for an avera b'mezid, certainly not a lav b'mezid. Some rare exceptions, maybe in the case of asham, though very rare. Olas may be a different thing when it comes to a bittul aseh and machshavos. We'll talk about that another time. But the point is that so korbanos are generally sin offerings are for an aver b'shogeg. Why? Because that's what they're addressing. They're addressing that righteous person who's been contaminated unintentionally. And that opportunity to allow that person to get the mila that he's ra'oi for in olam haba is a tremendous act of ava. Uksha'en beis hamikdash kayim. So, of course, that this concept gets us very scared, you know. What about us? We don't have that option for korbanos. So what do we do? And again, that's what I was saying before, that the fact that there is no korban for a general lav b'shogeg, does that imply that this isn't necessary? So here, I don't know the answer. On one hand, he said before all averos. On the other hand, the fact that there's no korban implies maybe it's not necessary. So I don't know. One way or the other, though, He says, what about nowadays? Nowadays, we don't have korbanos. So, mishalech alei yisurin lemarek mehen osan shigagos. So, yisurin are to serve that purpose. They are in place of korbanos. They cause that same miruk that was achieved by korbanos in this world. Now, parenthetically, I forgot to mention, it is interesting, the Ramban in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra gives a different explanation for korbanos. There he says the purpose of korbanos is to, well, he says over there that the real reason is al-pisod, and he's not going to explicitly tell us what it is, but kefima sha'anu yicholim lahavin, the purpose is sort of to impart to the person the gravity of what they've done, and inspire change and tshuva. Now, so here he's getting a different answer. It's not a stira. I think it is interesting. But one way or the other, so back to here. So what in the event that there's no Beis HaMikdash, so then Yisurim cause that same miruk that could be accomplished through korbanos. Uleskaper b'Yisurim kidei lios nikiyim l'olam haba. So Yisurim allow for the kapar, so we'll be nikiyim l'olam haba. Kshem shekarbanos ava v'chemla al Yisrael, v'lekarban tachas kan v'eshchina, sh'nemar olas tamid l'doro sechem, pesach ol moed lefnei Hashem, asher iva'ed lachem shama, v'no'adati shama l'vnei Yisrael, v'nikdash b'chvodi, v'shachanti b'sof b'nei Yisrael, v'yisi l'cham l'lokim, v'yedu k'ni Hashem l'keichem, asher v'yisi yosem eretz Yisrael, v'shachni b'socham, kach, yisurin alalu, ava v'chem lala adam. So the answer is that they're called yisurin shalava because they too show tremendous ahava, because it's a gift. What's the gift? The gift is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows them to be cleansed in this world so as to make them ready for Olam Haba, right? That's why they're Abba. Yisur shel Ava mean that Hashem, in his Ava, gave us the opportunity to cleanse ourselves so that we will be pure and able to experience Olam Haba. And that's why the Ramban writes over here, Ava mikol makom afilu yisur elu l'kaparin ulamira chaytein ba'in. Even though we call him yisur shel Ava, it doesn't mean that they're not al hachet. In other words, he's rejecting that idea that, again, that I'll get to in a second, Tyler. He's rejecting the idea that Yisur and Shalava means there's no chait. Again, the simple understanding, the way Rashi and Rambam seem to understand it. No, that's not the pshat in Yisur and Shalava. They too are bayin ala chait, but it's different. They're bayin ala chait. They're not punishment. They are purification. Okay, yes, Tyler.
Yeah, I just wanted to know why can't we just say karbanos and that would take care of the karbanos that we actually can't do? You can say the actual, like we do in chakras.
That Nishal, you're asking a good point. And we have this concept of Nishal Malpam Sasenu and the like. But the implication is that that saying it is not the same as doing it, right? Otherwise, even Bisman, when they had karbanos, why bother bringing a karban? Save a lot of time and money and just say it. So the answer is that to some degree, saying the parsha of karbanos, learning the parsha of karbanos, hopefully internalizing the ideas of the karbanos is in some way in place of bringing the karbanos. But that's not to say it's exactly identical. Okay.
Are we doing?
Yes.
Can you explain again what the difference between the Ramban's approach and Rashi's is? Because Rashi, we were saying earlier that it's a sense of, in order to get more Olam Haba.
The simple understanding of Rashi is, again, now, could it be that this is what Rashi means? Maybe. I don't know. As I said, maybe Rashi and Amud Beis sort of sounds this way a little bit. But the simple reading of Rashi, and the way the Rambam says it, is all Rashi says is Yisur and Shalava mean that Hashem punishes the tzaddik or causes the tzaddik to suffer so as to give him more reward, right? It's like, you know, if you're undeserving of suffering because you didn't sin and I cause you to suffer, so I have to compensate you for that, right? And that compensation is Olam Haba. So by the person Taka didn't sin, right? That's what Rashi says. He didn't sin. But so therefore the Yisurin are to give more Olam Haba. That's what Rashi says. So according to Rashi, it sounds like the Yisurin are not Ba'in al Hachet, right? The Ramban says they are Ba'in al Hachet. Now, if so, then why aren't they regular Onesh? So that's where the Ramban develops his idea, which is that they're very different than regular Onesh. Normally, Yisurin that are Ba'in al Hachet are when you've done an Avera B'mezid. This is something else. This is when you've done an Avera B'shogeg. And they achieve a different goal. They're meant to purify the contamination of the soul and thereby make a person worthy of Olam Haba. And that's why, again, in this last line, he says, again, Lafuke Rashi, or certainly Lafuke de Rambam, when he says over here again, Avol mikol makom afilu yisurin elu l'kapara ulamira chaytein bayim. That's against the Pashtos and Rashi. Rashi says nothing about kapara and mira chayt. Okay, is that clear?
Does Rashi specifically say that it has not, that it's not bayin al chayt, or he just doesn't say anything?
That's what he said before. It's conceivable that you could learn Rashi this way also. Again, maybe the Rashi Amud Beis supports that. But the simple understanding of Rashi is not that way. But if you want to say that there's no machlokas, fine. I'm just, Rashi doesn't say any of this. All Rashi says is that, right, I'll read you again the Lashon of Rashi, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu miyasro b'olam hazeh below shum avon kidei laharbo saro b'olam haba. So the Pashut Pshat Rashi is not this way. Okay, good. Okay, So we're just beginning. And unfortunately, we're not just beginning this year, but we're just beginning the Ramban. Okay. Good. So now he's explained the idea of Yisurin Shel Ava. Again, they're called Ava because just like Karbanos, a reflection of Hashem's love for us by allowing us the opportunity to purify ourselves, so too Yisurin are an expression of that Ava. And he brings a proof for his interpretation in Yisurin Shel Ava. Interesting, right? I'll just say it outside. You could follow along inside. It's the Gemara in Sanhedrin records that when Rabbi Eliezer was sick and he was dying, his students came to visit him. And all, except for Rabbi Akiva, were distressed to see the amount of pain that Rabbi Eliezer was experiencing. So Rabbi Akiva told him that, you know, as long as Rabbi Eliezer's wine never spoiled and his grain was bountiful and everything was going well, you might have thought that he was getting all of his reward in this world. But now that we see you suffering, Rabbi Eliezer, we see that you will receive reward in Olam Haba as well. So Rabbi Eliezer says back to him, he says, I don't understand. Is there anything I did wrong? That's what he asked Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva says that there's nobody who hasn't sinned. Okay, Ad Kan the Gemara. Says the Ramban. Now, if you say that the cause for Yisurin Shel Ava is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu causes a person to suffer in order to simply increase their reward, right? Even though they haven't sinned at all, why would Rabbi Akiva ascribe Rabbi Lazar's agony to sin? Maybe they're just Yisurin Shel Ava, designed to increase Rabbi Eliezer's schar. In other words, from here we see that even Yisurin Shel Ava must relate to sin, right? We couldn't possibly, you see over here, I'm just reading outside from the paragraph that begins, Uveperk Chelek Amru Kishachal Rabbi Eliezer. So that's where he brings proof. He's saying there's no such thing as pure suffering just to get more schar. Okay, so if we were to stop here, we would get the impression that Ramban maintains that all suffering is retribution or atonement or cleansing from sin, right? In other words, all suffering relates to sin. But now the Ramban tells us that that's not true. And the Ramban gives a couple of types of suffering that might not relate to sin. And I think each of them is very interesting. So the first thing he says that might be an example of this is Hahovim Benoeg Shel Olam Vabayim Al Kol Adam. If you just take a look again at the next paragraph, we're now up to Od Hiskiru Chachamim Derech Acheres Bisurim Amru. This is Gemara Erchin. We actually mentioned it earlier this year as well. Tani Rabbi Yishmael Kol She'avru Alav Arbaim Yom Velo Yisurim Kibel Olamo. Somebody who goes 40 days without any Yisurim, they got all of their schar. Upira Sha'inyan Hazehu Min ha-mikrim ha-hovim b'noeg shel olam v'abayin al-kol adam. Just talking about the type of, I don't know, everyday aches and pains, you know, and he gives examples. He says an example is a headache you get if you're standing in the sun for too long. And these types of everyday aches and pains are not necessarily meant to atone. He alludes to the Rambam, who says that this is a natural result of inhabiting a physical world and having a physical body. And the Gemara over there says that only the absolute wicked are spared from these pains. And that's why the Gemara there says, Kol she'avru alav arbaim yom b'lo yisurin ki b'olamo. In other words, anyone protected from even these smallest annoyances. The Gemara's example is his shoes never untie, or he always pulls out the perfect amount of change from his pocket. So he's being protected in a unnatural way. And the only reason for that would be to prevent him from getting schar in Olam Haba. Because otherwise, naturally, he would be subject to these ordinary inconveniences. So what the Gemara, I think, is saying that he's quoting, the way the Ramban is reading it, is that this protection well, we'll say it this way. The Ramban here is saying, or the Gemara is really saying, that even the righteous are not protected from such experiences. And again, only those who are absolutely evil. So that's the next category of suffering. So that's another type of suffering that's not as a result of sin. Skipping to the end of the paragraph, he's just quoting the Gemara, v'zeh inyan acherhu. Einan mina yisurin sheh mishtanin bahen mina adam mizeh berov, aval yisurin mamish lo lamanu yisurin ala kapara. So there is a type of, again, normal suffering that doesn't have to do with the sin. That's like your shoes getting untied or picking the wrong coins. But yisurin mamish, right, those are lekapara, right? So the Ramban says there's two types of yisurin. There's hahovim b'noag sheva olam. Those aren't necessarily the result of sin. And then there's yisurin mamish. And yisurin mamish, he says, are only the result of sin. Well, now the Ramban says, is there any suffering that isn't the result of sin? Is there any suffering that isn't? No, I'm not talking about getting a sunburn, right? Any suffering that isn't real suffering, that isn't the result of sin. So here's really where the Ramban begins addressing the very difficult question, the fundamental question, right? Which is there does seem to be in the world suffering that's not as a result of sin. So first the Ramban deals with the concept of nisayon. B'mtishal v'tomar v'alom refersh b'torah, sheyesh yisurin shel nisayon. So we have to figure out what this means. So I'm going to summarize a little bit because it's late. The Ramban here outlines a number of reasons why the righteous might suffer. So one of them is atonement, right? Like we've discussed, either retribution or cleansing the soul for sins that they've committed. And then he adds other functions. He says that to show the world the extent of Hashem's love to God by the tzaddikim's love for God by seeing how they remain loyally devoted to God despite the agony that they sometimes experience. And the Ramban over here says this is one of the ideas of a nisayon, right? If you see over here where it says nimtza nisayon hazeh mida tova shad mekabel boschar v'shmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu mis'ala bekach lodio ad heichan magia ahavaso v'yiraso belev avadav ve'ach nimshachin achar mitzvosav v'osin ritzono kirtzonim. This also relates to this week's parsha. In other words, what happens is that when these tzaddikim suffer and they remain loyal and committed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is a tremendous kiddush Hashem. And that's the idea, that's one idea at least of the nisayon. And then the Ramban goes ahead and says, and we have a lot of explanations why a wicked person might prosper. So he writes, sometimes it's to reward him for the good things that he's done. Sometimes it's for the schus avos that he has. Sometimes God grants him long life to give him an opportunity to do tshuva. He writes that some geonim say, it doesn't seem not clear if he accepts this, that he gives them prosperity to test or challenge the faith or commitment of other people. It's an interesting idea that he says over here. I think he uses the lashon of anshe tarmis, the people of deception, because they use the success of the wicked as an excuse to justify their wicked ways. And then he writes, or to test other people, right? So if you just take a look at the paragraph, he writes, Keder sheyesh b'tzadikim, drachim harbe l'kapara, kach yesh b'rishayim. So now explaining why right wicked would prosper. Number one, yesh atolim lo lahavido kedei liten lo schar miut, maisim tovim kemosh kriyashno. So number one, to reward them for the good things that they've done. Number two, v'yesh sheposkin lo chayav v'shalva l'chesed avosav, like we said, chosavos. Number three, v'yesh marichin lo ad sheyasha v'tshuva shlema k'derech shasal menashe, Hashem gives him a chance to do tshuva. And then this is that fourth reason that we said, v'go'onim zal she'amru, Shekhadosh Baruch Hu posik shalva l'rishayim l'nasos bahem anshe harasha ula v'hatar meshiyu mischazkin v'risham, v'omrim hinei eila rishayim v'shalvei ha'olam hesigu chayil. So these are all reasons for the prospering of tzaddikim. Okay, now, then the Ramban says, so he's explained why on occasion the righteous suffer, why on the occasion the wicked prosper. So he says, well, if it's so simple, I gave you the answers to all the questions, so why do we find so many of the tzaddikim and Tanakh, for example, asking about why the righteous suffer and the wicked prospect and the wicked prosper, right? Yirmiyahu, David HaMelech, Yishayahu, Habakkuk, Iyov, they all, you know, grapple with this question. So that's the paragraph, the next paragraph, in Tishal. Then Tishal v'tomar velo mefurish b'torah sheyesh yisurin shel nisayon. There, there is this concept of nisayon. And then just read it a little later, v'im tishal v'tomar harei shetiknu chachamim drachim halalu lefi kabalasam ulefi achrei psukim shel Torah nevi'im im kein mahu zeh shenevi'im tzvachim al ha'inyan hazeh umasha tama yirmiya ala rishayim tzadik ata Hashem ki ariv eilecha ach mishpatim adaber oscha maduach derech rishayim tzaleicha v'amar David ach rik zachisi levavi v'erchatz benikayon kapai v'gomer v'tam yishayahu ala tzadikim Lama Titao Hashem Idrachecha, etc., etc., and Habakkuk. Right? What's going on? How do we explain that? Right? If he's answered all the questions, the purposes of the of suffering, so why is it that these great Nevi'im seem to continue to ask the questions? Right. Likewise, he says Chazal. Right. We started off with this. En biyadenu lo shalvas rishayim. Isn't it all simple? Haven't we answered all the questions? The Ramban says. So the Ramban is going to say, well, there's two approaches to this question, and it goes back to a Gemara that we saw earlier this year, the Gemara that has a machlokas whether there's such a thing as death in Yisurin, not as a result of sin. So there's a view of Rav Ami. Rav Ami writes that all death and suffering is the result of sin. If you remember, we saw the Rambam in Menuchim say that's the way we paskin. We paskin like Rav Ami. But the Gemara refutes that position. It asks a tiyuft on Rav Ami. We thought it was very interesting that the Rambam nevertheless said that's the correct view. At least in Moran Vuchen, maybe in Mishneh Torah, he doesn't say that, as we explained. But one way or the other, Rav Ami's position is refuted. So Rav Ami, so that being the case, then there is Misa below Chait, there is Misa below Yisurin. And the Ramban then says there's another place where you see this Gemara is debated. There's a first view in the Gemara that says all Yisurin is a result of Chait, and Rav Meir says no. Rav Meir says that humans can't understand the reason for all suffering. In other words, suffering is not always commensurate. Right? Take a look over here. The Amru Bibrachos, Bikesh Moshe Lo, Diod Rachav Nasim Lo, Shenemar Odieni Nas Derachecha. Amru Lufan Ribon Shalolam, Ipnema Yesh Tzadik Vetov Lo, Rasha Viralo. Etc. I'm like Rosh Moshe Tzadik V'Tovlo Tzadik Gamor Tzadik V'Ralo Tzadik Sheinu Gamor Rasha V'Tovlo Rasha Gamor Rasha V'Ralo Rasha Gamor V'Ze Inyan Al Derech Shepirash Nulamala V'Pirong Tzas Ha'Onesh Ba'Olam Hazeh L'Zachoso L'Gamre Ola Vido L'Olam Haba V'Lashon Acher Amru V'Tzadik V'Tovlo V'Tzadik Tzadik Ben Tzadik Tzadik V'Ralo Tzadik Ben Rasha V'Amru Gamor Pligad Rameir V'Tanem Ishmed Rameir Shelo nitnu lemoshe zu amida shenamar v'chanos yes asher achon. Af al pi she'enu hagon. V'richamti es asher arachem. Af al pi she'enu hagon. Kolomar. She'enu hagon ledas b'nei adam. Lomar shelo nimsara hamida hazu ledato shel adam. So the Gemara originally says, yeah, the answer to the question is very simple. Why would righteous suffer? Because they've done some averos. Why would the wicked prosper? Because they've done some mitzvahs. Very neat, very simple. We answered all the kashas. And then the Gemara says, you know what? Goes to Meir and says, no. No, we can't actually. That's not it. That's not the whole story at the very least. There's more to it. There's something else here. There's something we can't understand. Something a human can't understand. So the Ramban says that's the same conclusion as the other Gemara. We reject with Ami. There is suffering that's inexplicable. That things that can't be explained. So he says, very interesting. He says that according to Rav Ami's school of thought, that there's no suffering without sin. So we could understand why, at least in theory, why the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper. And if so, then he says that when these tzaddikim, we asked before, how do we explain Yirmiyahu and Habakkuk and David all asking, why do the righteous suffer? You have to say that those aren't questions. Because, right, if we know the answer to the question, then they also knew the answer. Well, if there's something that David HaMelech didn't know, that Habakkuk and Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu didn't know. So why are they asking? They're not actually questions. They're rather calls of anguish. In other words, Madua Derech Roshayim Tzalecha is not a shaila. It's sort of a cry of despair, right? Let's read it inside. Vine kviya svar rishona hakol betam yadua v'tana museges. According to the svar rishona, again, who's the svar rishona? That is Rav Ami's view. That is the view, the initial view in the Gemara Brachos that says that the answer to the question of why does a tzaddik suffer is tzaddik sheino gamor. Why does a rasha prosper? Rasha sheino gamor. Right? According to that first mahalich, the svar rishona, right, then everything is understood. That's like the sick person, the suffering person who's screaming out because of it in pain. It's not a philosophical question. It's not a theological question. We know the answer to all the questions according to this first school of thought, what he calls the Svara Rishona. So why are the Nevi'im asking? They're not asking. What are they saying? They're just crying out in agony, right? They see it. They're troubled by it. They cry out in agony, but there's no intellectual question. So that's the first school of thought. But remember, Ramban says that first school of thought, that school of thought that there's an answer to the question has been refuted. It's rejected. Which view do we accept? Rav Meir. And Rav Meir holds that actually there's suffering that can't be explained. That there is no answer. It's not because of sin. Sin might be the cause of a lot of the suffering, a lot of the seeming injustice, but it's not everything. There are people who are entirely innocent that nevertheless suffer. And in that case, there is no rational explanation, he says. So now it's very easy to understand why the Rishayim are asking the question. The prophets, the Nevi'im, right? When the Nevi'im are asking the question according to the second school of thought, they're actually asking a question that they don't know the answer to. They're not just cries of pain, but they're genuine questions. Because even the greatest prophets fail to understand, fail to figure out how we could reconcile divine justice and divine benevolence with their own experience or the experience of us or others. And Rabban continues and says, that is the Taina of Eov. That's what's going on in Sefer Eov. Eov says that my suffering cannot be explained by any of the explanations that are given. I didn't sin, or I certainly didn't sin in such a way that this was warranted, right? All the explanations don't work. And it's not just Eov. Ramban says, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says when he sees Rabbi Akiva suffering. Remember the Gemara Menachos, Chaf Tes on the base, when Moshe Rabbeinu sees Rabbi Akiva's skin being flayed with iron combs. So he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Zu Torah v'Zu Schara. And what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell him back? Shtok kach Allah b'machshava lefanai. So what is Hashem saying to him? Says the Ramban, Ratzu, right over here, you see, Ratzu chachamim lomar she'en misasol shabi akiva b'yisurin halalo re'uya lo linakos mimenu mimiyot miyot mimaisim rayim lefisha et tzadik gamor kol yamav. I got very interesting. It says kol yamav. Rabbi Akiva, kol yamav. I thought Rabbi Akiva, you know, remember when he was young, he said, you know, if I would have seen a Talmud Chacham, I would have kicked him. Maybe it means because he did Tshuva Shlema. So that's the same thing as Tzadik Gamor Kol Yamav. So can't be that he was suffering for that. There's no, if suffering was the result of sin, there's no way to explain Rabbi Akiva's suffering. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was asking. Elasha inyan nela, it's a hidden thing. The kach alav machshavas bal machshavos yisbarach cheftzo ritzonu. Right, that's what it means. Kach alav machshava lefana. You can't understand this, Moshe Rabbeinu. You can't understand this. Chazal here were telling us that there are certain things that we cannot expect to understand. But we could be certain that this suffering was not just the result of Averos. So now the Ramban says that this is the whole idea or the conclusion or the central message of the book of Eov. The book of Eov is, of course, very cryptic. As we mentioned earlier, the Rambam has his explanation. Everyone who talks about suffering has their read on the book of Eov. We talked about the Rav before and called Odido Fake talking about suffering, and he has his Mahalach on Eov. It's a lot. It's very hard. But this is the Ramban's Mahalach on Eov. And he says it over here. He says it even more in detail in his Perush al Eov, which is printed in the Kisvei Ramban as well. The Ramban says that, remember what happens in Eov, right? Eov suffers, says he was an innocent person, he suffers. His friends visit him, and his friends attempt to make him feel better, but of course they make him feel much worse. The more Eov rants against divine injustice, the more his friends dig in to defend God and thereby implicate Eov. And then there's this long dialogue, which seems somewhat repetitive, and the nuances of each opinion are obscure. So the Ramban goes and breaks down what each position held. But here, the Ramban deals with one particular issue, which is then a fourth person comes, Elihu, and he has this long monologue. But the difference is that unlike the other friends who are rebuked, Elihu's view is held up. It's clearly different than the other friends, right? The Pasuk says, Vayichar, this is Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Beis, Vayichar af Elihu. Be'iov charapo al sadko nafsho me'elokim, right? So he's upset with Eov for thinking that he is more righteous than God. And then the pasuk says that that Hashem, that he's also upset at the other friends. Uvishloshes re'av charapo al asher lo matzo ma'ana b'yashio asio. And he had tainas against the other three friends who condemned Eov, Yershiu es Eov. In other words, until this point in the book, it seems like there's only two options. Either Eov deserved to suffer, as his friends claimed, or he suffered unfairly, as Eov claims. And Elio shows up, and he says, you know what? Both of you are wrong. There's a third option. A third option that you haven't considered. And now Elihu comes and delivers that message. So what is it that he says? So we'll have to leave off on a cliffhanger. We're out of time. And Be'ezras Hashem, next week, we will begin with what the secret message of Elihu is. What's his answer to the question? And in answering that, we'll see this new type of, this new explanation for suffering, right? A new explanation. Something very secretive, obviously. Something that we saw before, even Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't quite understand. Something that when Ramban explains it, he's only going to allude to it. All that, Be'ezras Hashem, next week. So, B'siyat Hashmai will continue next week. I recommend that everyone read this passage in Shaar Gemorim. Maybe go over what we've done today and go ahead and take a sneak preview of what we're going to do next week in Be'ezras Hashem. And B'siyat Hashmai will pick up next time. I see there are some questions which I'm happy to take now. Otherwise, have a good Shabbos. Okay, Jacob.
Thank you, Rabbi. Does anybody speak about Gilgulim in terms of suffering, like especially when it comes to
Okay, come back next week and we'll see.
Oh, that's next week. Okay.
Okay. All right. All right. Have a good Shabbos.